welcome back again.
And,
we're here again. We're here again. Back again. Yeah. We studied it last time. We didn't look exactly the same way we looked last time we studied it. Obviously, we didn't study it well enough because we're here again, having to do it again. I'm going to have to share, if you listen up this time, we're going to have to come back and do it again.
So if you talk in class, you'll have to repeat the course again.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem. Other exciting things like that. Where do we get to? So, we know it's said about the Arizal that he could see a person's past lives and on their face. Person would come in and he knew exactly who they were, what their route was, who they were in the past, and what their rectification was, what their tikkun was in this world, what they needed to do to fix it. So there's still people who have that ability, apparently have that ability. I've sent people in our generation who claim to have it. I'm aware of one couple who went to a certain Makubal, because they were having shalom bayit issues, and he explained to them that their issues in this life went back to a previous time where they had issues and they just need to solve it. That's their tikkun, to kind of solve it now and not to get divorced and all that other stuff that, right? You have to actually try and fix it now. But if you haven't got that, you haven't got your friendly neighborhood Kabbalistic rabbi to ask, why is it that my wife just can't make Kaneda laugh like my mother? There must be some deep reason. Right? If you haven't, then so we have to rely on more simple forms of trying to work out our tikkun. So we said that Slono Rebbe gave us great help when he said that those things that we find difficult, they're the areas that we need to work on. Right? Those things that we find difficult. And Hashem wants to give us our tikkun. He wants us to get there. Right? The purpose of bringing us back down here was to achieve a tikkun, a rectification. It wasn't here to punish us, chas v'shalom. Right? There's no such thing as punishment. Hashem is interested only in one thing, that everyone is rectified. And when we're rectified, that's how we get to experience this great Olam Haba that Rav Shimon was talking about just earlier. Right? So that's the ideal. So all of these things that we're going through, they're only for our benefit, and they're only as a result of our own action. We cause everything. Everything we're fixing is in our hands. Right? It was in our hands in a previous lifetime, and it's in our hands now. We have no complaints. No, we think we do. Right? One of the tests of life is not to complain, not to think, lo magia li, I don't deserve this. And the truth is, we deserve everything. But it's hidden. We only see a very narrow part of the picture. We don't see everything that's going on. There's an advertisement in the UK on, they used to have a thing called television, apparently. And occasionally they do like commercials. Anyway, so there was a commercial for, I can't even remember what the commercial was for, but it was very well done. What it was, you saw this guy who was walking down the road. And because it was a stereotypical commercial, so a black guy looking rough came and grabbed his briefcase. He came towards him, and the guy lifted up his briefcase like that to protect himself, and the black guy grabbed his briefcase, and it froze the picture. And it basically said, from this perspective, it looks one way. But if you see the pull, it was for a newspaper that said that they gave a big perspective. But what happened, then the camera angle widened open, and instead of just focusing on the man and what you then saw was that he was walking under a building site, and there was stuff about to fall, and he went to push him out of the way to save him, not to take his bag. Right, but you didn't see that. You only saw that from the wider angle. So it said if you see the wider picture, then top. Right, but that's where we're at. We are seeing the narrow. We're seeing the one lifetime. We're short, blinkered. We don't see the wider picture. We haven't got that wide angle lens. We don't step back. If we could step out to where Hashem is, or to outside of ourselves, we'd see the bigger picture. And in the bigger picture, everything makes sense. Right, coming back to the child who wants to have a chocolate bar, right? And he's just had a chocolate bar and he wants another one. Abba, Abba, give me a chocolate bar. For the child in his narrow perspective, what I want right now is another chocolate bar. And you're not letting me, you're me, you're cruel. But the child doesn't see the larger perspective. He sees what's in front of him. I want a chocolate bar, you're not letting me, that's mean, that's cruel. Why not give it to me? But that Abba sees the larger perspective. If I give you that, it's going to ruin your teeth. It's going to make you fat. It's going to keep you addicted to that. You're not going to eat your dinner, etc., etc. So the bigger perspective is, it's not going to be good for you. But the child doesn't see that. The child only sees the smaller perspective because that's how he's born. I don't know what it means to have teeth yet. I don't know what it means to be fat and to not eat my dinner. And all these, they're not even on my radar. Same with us. All the other additional factors that are relevant are not even on our radar. It's not like I'm looking at them and I'm ignoring them. They're not even there. I have no clue what I'm missing. There are factors out there which are just, they're just not apparent to me. They would have to, and like a child, if you try and sit there with a child and you explain, the reason why I'm not giving you a chocolate bar right now is, if I get you used to eating lots of chocolate, then you're not going to, you can't even take it in. So if someone was going to come to you, you might not even take it in. Even if I could tell you that right now, the reason that you're having Shalom Bayit problems is because in a previous Gilgul, you had this business dealing, and I expect, yeah, but why am I suffering now? I still don't get it. Even if I could tell you, it might not help. For the kid, I understand, but I still want it now. I still want the chocolate bar now. Thank you. And if you ever tried it, you'll know. Right? You try to explain to your kid why you're not letting them have whatever. And then, I don't care. They still want it. Even I'm giving them the greatest person. So, even with the knowledge of Gilgulim, it helps us only to an extent. Because we're still very much self-focused and self-centered. And, I understand and I appreciate that it's all a big rectification. That's very nice. But right now, I still want the money, I still want the women, I still want the cars, I still want everything I want. Even though I understand there's a bigger picture, yoffy. But I'm still, in myself, limited by my own personal self-limitations. So Gilgulim is helpful, but I need to also take it a lot on faith. That it's one of those things that I hear and I understand, and I need to accept that it's something that I can't fully rely on, I can't fully deal with. Just like I'm a child and my Abba says to me, I can't give it you, it's not good for you. And okay, I trust you that you know what you're talking about. I think it's fine. I think it's good for me. Right? But you have to trust your Abba that it's good for you. So too with our suffering. Right? I understand what you're saying, kind of. But there's a level of, I just actually have to trust you. God, this is good, this is for my good, this is going to work out. So the rectification, reincarnation is just one of the types of ways that Hashem gets us to our tikkun. Coming back and fixing in situ. Going through it again. We know in the laws of Teshuvah, I think Leonardo the Rambam brings in the laws of Teshuvah, that the highest level of Teshuvah, or the way you know you've done Teshuvah, is when you are put through the same circumstances again, and you choose the right time. He says over there that he brings an example that you with a woman, because they're all the examples, right? That it was the same woman, the same opportunity, the same lust, the same whatever, and this time you said no. Right? And so the question is always asked on that, well, it's never going to be exactly the same. Because you're never going to have the same people, and it's never going to be the same events. And it's never going to be the same time, and what I knew then, what I knew now, and I already failed last time, and now how are you ever going to have that position that the Rambam describes, that it's exactly the same, and this time you choose right? Well, the only the only reality that can come is a Gilgul. Because I'm not aware that I went through that same test before and I chose differently. Now I need to go through the same test again. Right? So one of the ways of complete teshuvah, according to that level of teshuvah, where you have the same scenario completely, and this time you choose correctly. So one of the ways of understanding that is that's in your Gilgul. In your next life, you had the same scenario, but you chose correctly. That's how you fixed it. So, Rav Yitzhak Ginsburg says there are five different levels on which judgment, punishment, and rectification, these are his words, occur when necessary after death. Each one is meant to instruct and rehabilitate the soul. The first three emanate from the side of Gvura, and the final two are from the side of Chesed. First three are more of a judgment, din, harsh. And the final two are more from a loving kindness, chesed type. What are these five? So the first level he writes here is called chibut hakever, the death pangs of the grave. Unfortunately, gentlemen, when we pass on from this world, it's not like they try and say in the movies that they just go to sleep. You just fell asleep and that's it. And then you would get aged and everything's fine. Fortunately not. Unfortunately, the grave is very painful. The grave is very painful. Why? They say that the neshama hangs over the grave for 3 days. Dying is a very painful process. That is part of the tikkun, part of the cleansing process. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. Right, we know that people like Moshe Rabbeinu, his death was like taking a hair from a cup of milk, right? Very easy. And the opposite, in the analogy, is taking a thorn bush through a cotton wool, right? So what's going on here? What's the analogy teaching us? Now it's teaching us about the ease of removing something, one piece from another. Right, the thorns from the cotton wool or the hair from the milk. So what are we removing? You're removing the neshama from the body. Right, that's what's happening. At the time of death, the neshama is leaving the body. That's either easy, the neshama leaves very easily, floats away, doesn't even notice when you take the hair from the milk doesn't even move, doesn't even notice, everything's your feet. Why? Because the neshama's where I'm with you, I'm there, I'm thank you, bye, it was nice knowing you, I'm off. Right, he's very happy, very happy. Or you have the opposite, which is, I'm holding on, I'm not leaving. That's me, that's my body, that's me down there. Where are you taking me? And the neshama doesn't want to leave. And it's fighting, it can't stay. And it's like ripping out the thorns through the cotton wool, right? To why? When a person is so invested in their body, that they think that is them. This is me. This is me. This is my beard. This is my ears. This is my beautiful face that I check every 5 minutes in the mirror. Right, these are my muscles that I've been in the gym working on day in, day out. This is who I am. Then I can't leave that. That's me. I don't recognize myself as a soul, as a neshama. But if I just see this as a vehicle, that this is nothing, this is just here to get me from A to B, then, Tom, I came from A, I arrived at B, I'm getting out of the vehicle. Who needs the vehicle anymore? Right? And so, Yochanan.
I read recently the Zohar has an incredible, beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah.
It says that when the man's time to come and the owner of the Heshbon calls the soul in, it's Hashem. Krishna. It says that the angel of death is standing there ready to check the person. Take his neshama and go back to Hashem. It says that the person who is attached, like you're saying, the person who is attached to his body, the more he's attached to Gashmis, the more he's attached to this world, the more he likes this world, it becomes the more he likes eating, the more he likes things, the more he likes looking at the beauty of this world and being attached to this world, it's the more attached he becomes to his body.
Right.
So when the death angel is there, shakting the person to take the neshama, the person that's not attached to all of this world, it's like one little cut and boom, the neshama goes. It's
right.
not, it's, you, it, you, like you're saying, it's like a hair coming out of milk. It's nothing. But the person is really, really, really attached. Now the death angel has a real job of shakting. He has to carve away, slowly away, all the stuff off of the neshama to release it.
Right.
So you get this image like, wow, I don't want to be attached at all to this world.
Right.
After reading that, you're like...
Fair. So it's a good point. It's not just attached to the body, it's attached to the material and physical idea of the world. I love the world. Oh, the internet is great.
Another...
What you can do is great. Ah, the 49ers, they're my life.
Exactly.
The New York, to be in New York, it's everything.
Yeah.
If I'm really attached to this world, the whisper, I don't want to leave this world.
I'd love to see Santana play a concert again. That's
very hard. That's very hard.
Yeah.
Right? So a good etzah for all of us, where we all have many, many more years to work on this, is to slowly remove ourselves from this world. Right? It's have to weigh up what's real and what's not. Yeah.
Another analogy is Rabbi Nachman's The Master of Prayer with his 10 different kingdoms. Each kingdom had a different taiva, whether it was for wealth, which was the hardest, or beauty,
right.
or
food
yep. or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
which
so
you could go
one.
Through.
So all of our taivas, you're right, all of our taivas are those things that tie us to this world.
And if you combine that with if you've ever done a tahara, or walked through a cancer ward, or an ICU, it is extremely difficult to see the people holding on. They don't want to let go.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're, 45 pounds and, with tubes up there and tubes in them right and left, versus Moshe Rabbeinu.
Right. Okay, your feet. Top. So that's the first excitement that awaits a person. We know that everything that happens at the time of burial and the whole mourning process, right? Often, especially from a secular point of view, the mourning process is for the people that are left behind. It's not true in the Jewish point of view. Jewish point of view, the most of the process is actually going on for the deceased, not for the people left behind at all. People left behind, right? If they were yashar, straight, they don't need so much mourning, right? We saw that Abraham didn't mourn at all, right? With the word bechia, that Abraham said against Sarah, is went with a small c to show that he didn't really cry at all. Didn't need to. There's no point crying. She's in Olam Haba. What's to cry for? Right? So we don't actually, we have, because we've got our own issues, so we need to have time to work it through our own system and yoki. But the person who dies, they have to go through a process. 3 days, 7 days, 30 days, a year. And everything we do in terms of saying Kaddish and things for the neshama, staying with the dead body from the time he dies until the time of burial, important to stay with him and say Tehillim the whole time, right? All of that is to help the neshama come to terms with where it's going and to be easier, much easier on him. Yes.
The other thing you have to remember is if you're in the States or anywhere else that doesn't have a Hever Kedisha, you cannot cremate the body.
Not to cremate the body, right? We don't go with cremation.
And think God we're here. but the podcast goes throughout the world.
Ah, you're right. No, you're right. It's important to say. Yeah, Jews don't hold by cremation. It's very, very painful for the deceased that it's cremated. It's not a good thing, and it should be avoided at all costs. Similarly to autopsies. If at all possible, a Jewish body should not go and undergo an autopsy. It's not kavod for the body, and it's not pleasant by any means for the deceased to see his body being worked on in that fashion.
Embalming.
Same thing.
Everything we don't hold by it because the body needs to disintegrate. Yosef was embalmed in order to take him back to Eretz Yisrael, but in the case of Tzaddikim, their bodies don't degrade anyway. But the rest of us, our bodies need to degrade. That's part of our rectification process.
Also in the process.
So
of
that industry. Stops it, and it's more painful because you're stuck.
I also heard a chiddush on that. Yosef was embalmed, but the reality is his body wouldn't have decayed anyway, so it wouldn't have looked like a mess to the Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim would have been worshipping his body.
Uh-huh.
They embalmed it, so it would look like it would have been not decaying anyways, because the reality is his body wouldn't have decayed anyway.
Same with cryogenic freezing, we don't go with that either. That's just asking for a that's just like until the body decays to a certain extent, the soul can't be released from it. Right, they're still attached to it. It needs to disappear so that there's no so that all that's left is the neshama. Neshama can then be free to be a neshama and not be tied left to anything.
Also, with the embalming, all the blood is removed and replaced and put in the drain and replaced with formaldehyde
in Egypt.
That
it's
they
not
like put them
pretty
some samim or something that
the body doesn't
the flesh
decay.
Will not rot.
So that's not a good idea. It's not a good idea.
But that's what
right? We also that's why people are a Jew should be buried straight into the earth, not in a casket, not in a coffin, right? That
or
just
in a
just
mausoleum.
Delays the whole process.
Or in a mausoleum, it has to be in the ground,
right.
Not in a building. And the body has to be properly cleansed by someone in this with their joint.
In the wall.
They're not putting the column,
there's an argument. The wall is filled with earth. It's not a concrete wall.
Sure. I saw they put it in, they put some sacks of earth in the closet.
Oh, I don't know the full what's going on.
Whereas in the States, they put it straight in the wall.
Okay. But look, truth is, whatever happens to the body, it's all hashkacha. Right? What does that mean? It means that a person should never do anything against halacha. Meaning, if halacha says you're not allowed to be cremated, then you shouldn't do that, and it's really bad. But if it happened, then it's hashkacha pratit, that's what that neshama needed. Right? Obviously, that was its unfortunate, needed that to go through that. Okay. Next on this fun list of things that no one should know is a tikkun which is called kafakela. Kafakela. What's kafakela? So kafakela literally means the palm of the slingshot. What's that? So it's an analogy. I don't know which one's the analogy, the slingshot or the top. One of them's an analogy of the other. It's of what happened, of being thrown. There are different descriptions, and it's not so clear because until you're there, you don't really know. But Tom, I'll try and describe things I've heard about it. Of being thrown from one end of the world to the next, and coming back again, and for like continuously. Yeah, so it's not fun.
The palm of the slingshot.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Basically, it's so there are different descriptions I've heard about what happens. So some people say it's a punishment for comes to teach you that you don't actually go anywhere. You think you're going somewhere, and then you get slung back the other way. you're actually, it's like not getting to your destination. Like you're getting thrown this way, and then you're going thrown that way. And then you think you got there, and then you get thrown back. Meaning you kind of wasted your life without any purpose of tackling or any direction or anything, right? And now you're seeing the result of that. That you're just going nowhere. You're like in this like going nowhere. Like you think you go and then you get thrown.
It's like being on a roller coaster. Back and forth. Round and round and round. You know, feeling the G-forces.
Right. From one side of the world, instead you go from like one side of the world to the other, meaning that you actually see everything. You get to see now, but you don't get to actually, you get to see what you messed up. Like you get to see in reality that this, you're the whole world, but you now can't take part, you're just getting thrown from one side, you're seeing one side to the other without any destination, without any goal, without any actually getting there. Right? Until you, that's a tikkun for that, maybe, for realizing that there was a tackle, a destination, a reason, and I ignored it completely. And I really want to go. I want to go somewhere. I don't want to just ping back. I don't want to stay playing on this casino poker all my life. And that's my life, which is meaningless. I go from the McDonald's to the ball game to the, right? Meaningless, without any real purpose. What's the point? But once I see the world and I see what all the possibilities were, and now I've got no choice but to just keep going backwards for I don't know however long it lasts, until I have a clear understanding that I want a purpose, I want a goal, I want to go somewhere, I want to actually have direction.
You realized today?
Yeah. I think after
the second shovel.
After the second shovel they put on the grave, yeah.
Before not, no. So when you're
like dreaming.
The
soul hovers above the body, right? It's like those past life, those near-death experiences where a person says, "I saw myself coming out of the body, and I looked down, and I saw myself on the operating table, the doctors were all around me, and nobody talk all that stuff." Maybe I don't, right? Because we only hear from the near-death; we don't hear from the death. So presumably, it was the same. Now it just came back. So if it's the same,
but it's not the same. Yeah.
But you're there, but they hang around until the death.
There was a clinic death, and they say they saw a light, they go up. Because they're not, because we realize only when the second shovel.
But there's a different path, because Hashem said, "This one I'm going to take upstairs, stick him in Beit Din, have a word with him, sort him out, and send him back down." But this one's not going that way. This one, the angel of death came and did his job. It's a different experience.
Yeah.
So it might not be the same. Might not be the same. But we have our Chazal saying that the soul hovers above the body.
Yes.
So that at least maybe is a similar type of.
It's a story about Vatican. He was dead. So then he was never in court.
Yeah.
Bring him back to this world.
Okay.
So he was not really dead.
He was not
really dead.
Nahon, so he didn't think
because
he was dead.
Nahon,
right, and they didn't put him in they didn't put him in the grave, and they didn't, right? They didn't
Well, there are cases where people were revived several days later. One case was my wife was doing a tahara on someone who was declared dead by Kaiser. And she was seeing her breathing. She immediately called 911, and they resuscitated her. I mean, this is, you know, thank God she wasn't scheduled for an embalming, which they're required to have embalming equipment in all facilities.
Okay.
But the other thing is, imagine what Ariel Sharon's going through now.
Yeah. Everyone has their own tikkun that they need to go through. But anyone who considers that should make them instantly religious. They see that. It's not normal. It's not much normal. I don't know how old he is now, but a man in his condition, at his age, to be in a coma for this long.
Since 2005?
Not 7-8 years. A man of his age in his condition wasn't a healthy man to start with.
Right,
you're not going to come for this longer. That is, how old is he now? 80, 90? He's like, it's not. If anyone looks at that closely, They should stop putting the tefillin. Okay. The next is Gehinnom. That's the next level of purification of the neshama.
We are the Gehinnom. We are the Shabbat.
No, a person who dies on Erev Shabbat apparently is spared from the first one.
Not the second one?
No, the first one. Maybe, I don't know, according to what he says here. I don't really know so much about that, I'm just reading what it says here. Okay, third one is Gehinnom.
That's why it's so important to bury the body as quickly as possible, even on Erev Shabbos.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, it's not fun for their soul to be hanging around, doesn't know what it's doing, it's in this limbo. Once it's in the grave, it knows it's dead, it can start. Right, but until then,
I mean,
it's very confusing.
You really have to put your foot down and insist that no matter who's coming, the body has to be buried.
One of the other things that a person should remember, is that Chazal say that when a person leaves, person's nifta, person dies, that they call him from Shemayim, but he gets confused and he doesn't remember his own name. And that's the reason why in the Shemona Esrei there's a place that a person says a pasuk that refers to their own name. It starts the beginning letter and the last letter of their name is what the pasuk says. And Chazal say that if a person puts that into the Shemona Esrei, that when they get to that time, they'll remember that, they'll at least remember their own name, which is a great help, because otherwise a person's very confused. And the other thing that Rabbeinu added is that the other thing that he should do is run straight to Rabbeinu. As soon as you get upstairs, you should run straight to Rabbeinu. Rav Dror said this a few days ago, that they used to take a note. We don't do that anymore. We don't take a note anymore. But a person... those are the two things to try and remember. Firstly, your name, and secondly, to run to Rabbeinu. Because he's going to pull you out of the heavenly court, which is not fun. Right, and we hear plenty of stories
of
Rabbeinu saving people from the head of heavenly court. Amash,
the heavenly court is not fun, even if you haven't gone through clinical death.
What court?
Heavenly court.
Heavenly court.
I read a story about a guy that didn't speak when he had his tefillin on.
He what?
He never spoke when he had his tefillin or tefillin on.
Who?
There was a story about that. He went to Shemayim, and on the merit of just doing that, not speaking when he has to lead and tefillin on,
yeah,
he was taken completely out of court. Okay. There's a whole story about it.
My wife was convicted of lashon hara.
In other words,
in Shemayim.
In other words, just.
And they told her to go back.
Right. So she works on that now? Sure. Yafeh, very
so
good.
It's better that the person will die and not will be in coma.
Yeah. He said, is it better that the person dies and not to be in a coma? And I said, yes.
But
meaning that the coma is helpful for him. This is part of his tikkun. The fact that he has to suffer in this fashion is part of his tikkun. It's going to help him when he gets to Shemayim.
And also there are people they recover after some years in coma. Open their eyes and they
right.
Well, hopefully Ariel Sharon
is
going to
where is my sandwich? Why didn't you give me my sandwich?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so next is Gehinnom. Okay, so again, I'm not going to talk about that because I can't tell you anything more than you would already know or don't. About Gehinnom. So Gehinnom basically, right, is there again for rectification, right? Fires of Gehinnom are 60 times hotter than this world. Actually, I can tell you this: the Rav Eliyahu Dessler in Strive for Truth has some great information on what happens in different talking about all these different levels, right? He says, when it comes to Gehinnom, he says, it's difficult for a person to imagine what it means to be 60 times hotter than Gehinnom. for a person to think about what it means that the fire is 60 times hotter. It's like, we can't really, like, to just hear the words of fire, it doesn't really mean anything. How do you try and... So he says, it's important to try and understand. So let me give you an example. He says, if you can imagine that if you take your finger and you put it over a flame, a small flame, right, and you leave it there for a couple of seconds, how hot that is. So he says, now imagine that you're putting your finger into that same flame, but that flame is now twice as hot. Right? And you leave it there for a couple of seconds, right, and it's now twice as hot. So he said, now go through that again, slowly, and three times, and four times, and five times, and then imagine putting your whole hand and your whole body and leaving it there, right, at 60 times, right? So now you can start to understand a little bit of what it means, right? It's not fun. So some say the fires of Gehinnom are the fires of the embarrassment, right? The embarrassment that we'll face, the embarrassment in this world, that when someone is embarrassed in this world. So he gets a taste of that, right? So what's the difference? The difference is it's 60 times hotter. 60 times more embarrassing. The person can imagine the most worst embarrassment that they could have had, right? But what happens? They're caught doing the most embarrassing, despicable, degrading, and in walks in, I don't know, the Rebbe, your wife, your mum, whoever you want, the TV news and your broadcast live on CNN, whatever it is that's most embarrassing. And you've got to go 60 times that. But plus, what's the difference? The difference is, in this world, when we're embarrassed, how long are we embarrassed for? Momentarily, a second, 3 seconds, 5 minutes. We have all our additional factors in this world that help us forget. Tom, put it out of my mind and forget about it. Just give me a drink. Let me calm down. Let me relax. Put it out of my mind, whatever. In Olam Haba, you can't forget about it. There's no pause. There's no, let me just, right? It's 24/7. It's like it's there. The power of that, the greatest, not Shabbat, the power of the greatest amount of that embarrassment is continuous.
Also,
so I can't get away from it.
In Olam Haba, you're not having,
and that's what's going to purify me. No, not 24/7. It means 24/6.
It's mukhlat. It's absolute.
24/6.
No, you're not having without time. It's like.
But there is a top. What time means in Olam Haba? We don't know, because we have time reference to here, because it's 11 months maximum, or 12 months in Gehinnom, no more than that. Top. So there is some sort of notion of time period, but whatever it is, it's a time period that we need to cleanse ourselves and do the tshuva, right? The embarrassment here helps us do tshuva. Right? When someone's embarrassed, you know, I shouldn't have done that, but you're right, sorry, Hashem, I'm sorry, right? I'm not going to do that again. It was really embarrassing, it was really degrading, or whatever. So I use that embarrassment to do tshuva. So I guess it's, I don't know, I guess it's a similar process. But there, we can't fix it so easily. Right, here we can just like do tshuva, change our ways, not do it again, do tshuva and everything's good. But in Olam Haba, we have no way of fixing it other than through the embarrassment and the desire, the will to never want to do that again.
But the living can help.
Uh-huh. So all of that helps. Right? All of that helps the merit of the deceased. It goes easier on him. His judgment goes easier. He's still guilty of whatever he did. He still needs a rectification. But it's an easier and sweeter.
And listen, you can with one Kaddish,
yeah,
say very, you can take one person off from the venue.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. How and why? Yeah, I don't know, but yeah. Okay, so that's Gehinnom, Yofi. So that those first three levels we said from the side of Gevura, strictness. Right? Obviously, right? Gevura is not fun to go through any of those three things. But again, all necessary, and the Neshama is very happy. The Neshama, where we learn in the Gemara, in Tanit, I think, was in Chagiga, I think it was Tanit. End of Tanit, where it says that when you get upstairs, the person signs on his own judgment, says, yeah, 100%. Right? You go to the heavenly court, and they say, the person needs 3 months in Gehinnom, you need 2 weeks at Kapakela, and and a quick dip in the river of fire, right? And that's your Tikkun. And you say, yeah, 100%, sign it. You're right, the person signs their own, right? They agree 100%, right? You don't go kicking and screaming. You're like, yeah, you 100%. Right, so we agree with it. So they're, so even though they're all from the side of strict judgment, they're so what are the next two? So the last two are from the side of Chesed, apparently, right? And they include Gilgul and what's called Ibor. Those are the two. Four and five are Ibor, we're going to explain now, and Gilgul, which is reincarnation to come back. So I'll explain them now. Although having said that they're from the side of Chesed, Rabbi Nachman says don't come back down here. Right? Stay with everything, with your cleaning upstairs, and don't, it's not good to come back down. Apart from the fact you don't know if you're gonna fix it anyway, you're gonna have to go through it even worse. You can like really mess up. But having said that, you can only mess up to an extent. What's the extent? So it's written in here, I don't know in the name of the Arizal or where he's, what source he's bringing it from. But he's saying in here that when a person dies, the part of your neshama that you rectified, that you did well on, goes into its place and can't be touched. You can't mess it up again. And it's only the bits that you didn't fix that need to come back down again. So in terms of a Gilgul, you can't, there's a level that you can't undo all the good you did. Right? If you were a Rabbi Akiva or a great Torah sage and you came back and you had a really, really messed up time, you went clubbing in this world, you don't undo 2,000 years of greatness, Baruch Hashem, right? That's safe. That bit you've saved, that's in the bank, right? But the bit that you needed to fix didn't get fixed. And that still needs to... But having said that, it's still not fun to come down. And if you mess up, you don't do good in this time, you've got to go through the pain anyway. Plus the pain of this world.
You might have to come back because you messed up.
Huh?
You might have to come back.
You might have to come because you messed up again, right? You're stuck in this. Right, who knows?
But don't we have a time limit? Until Mashiach?
Yeah, until Mashiach. But that's time limit down here. What that means upstairs is not so clear. Don't know. Don't know how if people don't know. Because the time here and the time there is not the same. Okay, so what's this? What are these last two levels of Ibor and Gilgul? So Gilgul we know about. Gilgul means that you come back down here for another go round. You take that bit of that soul that didn't do what it needed in it, and it comes back to try and fix again. Right? And it has, and we're given this, who we are now. We're all Gilgul. We're given the mazal of what we need. What's the mazal? The mazal is the conditions, whether you're born to a poor family, a rich family, whether you're born a Jew or not Jew, whether you're born to someone who's from, whether top you've got a handicap, whether you're really talented. That's your mazal that Hashem is going to give you in this world in order to then go and do what you need to do with that. Right? And how long you've got, like your length of years, that's kind of a fixed given framework that you're given to come down here with. You can't change that. You know, when you come down here and you're a boy born to from household in Bnei Brak, or you're not, you're a girl and you're born in New York in the Bronx. Who knows, right? That's Hashem decided that's where what your framework is, and you're clever, you're not clever, etc.
We can change the mazal with the prayers.
So there's a question about whether you can change mazal. So generally, the general view is that you can't change mazal, but in the extreme cases, you can. We see that you can. So for example, we see in the case of Hizkiyahu HaMelech, of one of the kings, I think it was Hizkiyahu HaMelech, that was decreed that he would die.
Oh, yeah.
And he got an extra 15 years.
Hizkiyahu
or Hizkiyahu? He was given... I don't remember that name. Hizkiyahu. Hizkiyahu was given an extra 15 years after he made teshuva, right? He was going to... Because he didn't want to get married. That was Hizkiyahu. He saw what was going to come from him. So Hashem said, well, fine, you're not getting married. But he changed his mazal. So top, there's a possibility, but generally speaking, that those bits don't change.
When he said no, he was very...
But he was right, Menashe, that he was a very evil king, was coming from him.
Why Hashem...
But what?
Menashe, that he was a very evil king,
that's
he
why
was
he didn't, that's
his
why he didn't want to.
Descendants.
Yes, Yosef.
No, yes. Why his Yosef didn't get married before?
Why did he want to get married? Because he saw that he would have... He saw with Ruach HaKodesh that he would have bad children. He saw that he didn't want to bring them, and it was true, and he did. And he did. But
yeah, okay, but Ruach HaKodesh told him, it's not your tafkid to.
Of course. You gotta go.
Okay, so what's evil? Let's go on to evil. So what's evil?
Evil.
Evil.
Ibor.
So what's evil? So what's evil? Ibor is.
Leia
also had a, she knew what was going to happen, right? Uh-huh. She married with his son. He didn't get married, and she was... Okay. Uh-huh. So, Ibor, what's Ibor? So, Ibor is like a semi-Gilgul. It's not a full Gilgul, it's a half Gilgul. What's Ibor mean? Ibor means that the Neshama, part of the Neshama, comes down into another body. Into another body. It's not you. Right? There's two ways the evil work. The evil works from the point of view of the soul that's coming in, and the point of view of the person who is down here that gets the soul. What does that mean? So let's look at it from both sides. The point of view of the person that is coming in. If a person has a very small tikkun that needs to be done, relatively speaking, a small tikkun. Let's say he didn't have the mitzvah of Purim Ravu. He didn't have children, right? He in his life, right? And he was a really holy man. L'dugma l'babetu Rebbe, right? I'm not saying anything about just a pure dugma, and everyone, please forgive me if I'm saying anything improper here. But if, for example, he's a pure holy man like the Rabbi, but he didn't have any children, so he gets to Shemayim, and there's a mitzvah that he didn't fulfill. Or it could be any other mitzvah that you just didn't have the chance to fulfill for whatever reason. It can be the concept of Ibor, this is just an example, it's not the only way. An example is that his neshama, his part of his neshama comes back down into an existing person in order to fulfill that mitzvah. And then once it's fulfilled that mitzvah, it can leave. It could stay for the rest of its life, or it can come down just for that purpose. But it's not the essence of the root soul of that person. Let's say it could be me, the dogma, and yeah. So that's that. So from the point of view of the person coming in, he's coming for example. It's not the only reason he might come in, but it's an example of why he might come in. For the point of view of the,
these aren't necessarily great things to have happen to someone.
It depends. Often it's very positive.
Really?
Yeah. There's negative. To get negative is not really called an Ibor, it's called a Dibuk, or it's called a Shadim, or whatever. But it's a similar type of process that another soul can come in to your body. So it depends. It depends on what the purpose is and what they're there to do. Other way...
It's like a river where someone did an Avera, and they, because of that Avera, they accepted the one of these lost souls that were stuck in this world and went into that body and started torturing that person.
Uh-huh. So you, right, so then, yeah, so stories of a negative soul, Dipukim, called, that can do that too.
Right, so 10,000.
You know, they're shaded. They're not the Shema.
Only when the Hashem gives you the permission, they go in.
Okay, yeah, but they're not really Neshama. They're shaded, even there are other spiritual forces. But here is a neshama that kind of joins in Ibor with the host, if you like. There's a host neshama. The other major way of Ibor that happens is when a person receives as a gift from Hashem a boost, an ability to transcend from where he is now to where he's going to be. And this can happen to any of us and all of us at different times in our life. When a person goes through an event and they come out a new person. Kilo is a new person. What does it mean? He got a new soul. He got a new neshama, so to speak, like colloquially. So what happens? So for example, this could happen when a person makes teshuva, bal teshuva, right? He gets in another neshama, a different type of neshama, an additional bit of neshama. When a person gets married, that can change his neshama for the woman. It can change things. When a person goes through a traumatic event, right? A near-death experience, whatever. So all of these times, the neshama can come in and help. And this can be the neshama of the tzaddik coming to help. What does that mean? Particularly, when a person goes to visit the grave of a tzaddik, and he feels a spiritual uplift by just going to see the tzaddik, then one explanation of that is ibul. The tzaddik is now joining in with you. A spark of his neshama has come into you and is now running with you. Now giving you chizuk, now giving you strength, now giving you motivation, right? Anyone who has been to Uman, Ezrat Hashem, mm-hmm. we should all merit to do so, will know that one of the things that a person feels most, I know, I can't speak for everyone, is that you don't need to sleep. There's almost no need to sleep. Whatever happened to that? Right, when I went with a group last year, 12 guys, and we did the tour, we went to Mezi Bush first and whatever. By the time we got to Uman, it was like 11:30, midnight, right? And we'd been traveling all day, and everyone was really tired. So I said, guys, let's go to the Sion first before we go to bed. And we hadn't made Marib. So I said, let's go and do Marib in the Sion. It was like midnight. A couple of guys that were already getting changed. They were like putting their bags down, and some guys like, they said, guys, come, trust me. Once you go walk into the Sion, you're not going to want to sleep. You trust me, you're not going to. And like guys in the pajamas, and they got back changed. Tov, let's go and do Marib. We need a dominion. So I said, come, everyone come. We all went to the Sion. To a man, we did Marib, and the people who were tired were no longer tired. Most of the people stayed 2 or 3 hours. A couple of guys stayed there the whole way through till Metz. No sleep at all. Didn't need it. Why? Oh, it was such a high that I got to Uman fine. No, they didn't care. They were ready to get into bed. You want such a high to see. They're not Breslovers. They were just guys I went with. Right? To see the rabbi and I was just wanted to stay up all night. No. I want interest. They had a piece of Rav Nachman. They didn't need to sleep. Who needs to sleep? You get a piece of the Sadiq. The Sadiq doesn't need to sleep. Right? There's no... You can just... Right? I was there once a couple of years ago. Late. 2, 3 in the morning. I decided to learn a bit. I did an amazing Bli Neder, I don't want to lie, was between 2.5 and 3 hours. I can't remember exactly. Something between 2.5 and 3 hours. Straight learning from a book. And I didn't get up. Right, normally I get up after 20 minutes, go to the bathroom, get a coffee, whatever. I did like 2.5, 3 hours without shifting from that book and that book. In the night time, incredible. Right, not me, completely not me. I can't, you paid me, I couldn't do that now.
I was there this year in Uman for 5 nights.
Yeah.
I sleep only 10 hours. The last 2 nights I'm not sleeping.
Right? He didn't need it.
Amazing.
Right? So that's an ibul. That's the neshama of someone comes into you to help you and it can be temporarily that you're on like when you're in Uman at the Sion, then you get a piece of, and then fortunately when you come home, you go to bed. It doesn't stay with you. It's not like right, that's it every night, 3 hours learning. Zohar, that's it, I did it while I was there, for sure, yeah, no chance. It's not there anymore, it's gone. Right, so there's a part that's just there, and there's another part which stays with you for the whole year, like that you know, now I'm on fire, now I'm a flaming Breslover that just doesn't shut up about Rabbi Nachman. Where did I come from? When it comes in? No, you just feel, personally, just feel good, feel relaxed, feel like you're not tired, feel happy, feel... Good, good. So that's Ebor. Ebor, so in terms of, so it has an effect for the one who's down here that gets the boost. And from the person, so the person that, whose neshama is coming in is either coming in to get rectified, to kind of be a host and to be rectified while it needs to, or it's coming in, if it's a tzaddik, to help you. And also the fact that it says that the Tanya says that when the tzaddik,
it's not like I don't find it is
That when the tzaddik comes in to assist you, the Tanya says that interesting, that the even though you only did it with the assistance of that soul, it wasn't me. When I did that 2.5-hour, 3-hour learning thing, it wasn't me. It was like, right, clearly not. Right, but it says, nice to know, I just read that now, the soul earns a full reward as if it had accomplished those great things on its own. It's like Mamasha Chesed. You get given that as if that's even you. I mean, it's not me, right? It's not, clearly, like we heard yesterday, Rav Arish said, that you should know that it's all coming through the tzaddik. That all your benefit, the fact that you can, like, the fact that I'm here teaching, the fact that I can actually read this book, right, it's not me. Right, it's all coming through the tzaddik, it's all right. But even though it's not me, we're still getting the reward. Through what merit? Don't know. But there you go. Yofi, how are we doing on time? Tov, that's 12 o'clock. That's where we're going to finish today.
Yaakov was describing an area where you're total void. There's no stimulation at all. It's just black. You've just this time. Yaakov.
Which Yaakov?
Nachman. The soul is in an area of total void. It's just like sensory deprivation.
Okay, I don't know about that. I've not heard of that. Rabbi Abraham is now, if anyone is interested, to teach on the tell me what you can teach.
How to read from the Torah.
How to read from the Torah
cantillations.
He's ready.